All right, Mandalorian fans, it's time for episode 5, The Gunslinger, chapter 5, excuse me. And the recap is heavy on the Kargus, Reef Kargus, or whatever his proper name is, Guild Code, previously on The Mandalorian, Mando. They all dislike you strongly. Sorgan, no population. Mando says no life for a kid, and then his robotic yes, yes, and then the opening of the show, or the intro, with the Lucasfilm and the Star Wars. And then we have a black screen with some sound effects, which sound like lasers to me, and we get what I believe is our first space battle. It's a brief one, but it is. You see this, so this is technically a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So remember that, because what happens in the space battle, like two spaceships battling, you know, like a drag racing, I mean, and there's a dude in a blackbird-like ship, and he's got a, he kind of does look like a Top Gun pilot. He doesn't have a full, I mean, I guess he should have a climate-controlled ship anyway. Yeah, but he looks like a Top Gun pilot. He does a lot of spinning. One of the engines on the Mandalorian's ship goes out at 1:30. If you're looking to pause this episode a few times, or 1:53, I don't have the ability, you know, and I'm on embargo still. No reading of any Mandalorian stuff, period. I mean, I did see accidentally a couple, headlines, but you know, I said that's clickbait. You know, even if it wasn't, it was baiting me to click it. But so Baby Oso is in a question mark. I said, is that a suitcase? Is it a, like, what is baby, is Baby Oso wearing Baby Oso's belt? But whatever Baby Oso's sitting in, it has four buttons. The yellow one or the orange one is lit. And it's not in Roy G. Biv order, because it goes red. Let me see my notes here. Red, green, blue, and then the yellow one is lit. So he's in something. He is holding on, but the ship is, you know, going around. And they say, well, do you need it? I guess you don't need it. Like, you just need something to hold, keep you in your seat. I don't know. Then we see like the kind of old school Star Wars, readouts, computer readouts, I think this was interesting. I did ask about momentum in space. Then there's the Top Gun moment, which is funny because the Mandalorian doesn't say anything, but if Tom Cruise was there, he'd say, that's my move, cause he hits the brakes, they fly right by, and the Mandalorian says, that's my line. Cause, the other pilot stole his line. Then the ship is, like, the engines are shut down. It's drifting in space as the theme music, the opening and the opening placard go up. The gunslinger, Mandalorian kind of resets the ship. I wasn't sure. He does a lot of button pressing, and he says, you know, we're losing, he's pressing buttons at first. He says, we're losing fuel. Then he does a reset or goes to backup power. I don't know which one. And then I thought about it that I guess it could never fly in space because, I couldn't be a cadet or anything because I don't do well with authority. So I couldn't be a member of like Starfleet or whatever. Even the Rebel Alliance, I'd say, you got too many rules. So boy. I'd say, so this is an alliance. Do you have like a, do I have to make my bed? And they say, yes, require. I say, okay, well, nice knowing you. I guess it could be like, and then for this, like being independent, I couldn't, I wouldn't be able to figure all that out. I mean, I can reset stuff, but I wouldn't, like, it looks like you actually have to have some knowledge. Then he calls in, he gets the ship restarted. He calls in to, Mos Eisley Tower. They say land at 3-5, landing strip, Mandalorian lands his ship, puts Baby Oso away. Which, I mean, this one, you say, dude, like, what, like, come on, man. Like, Mandalorian? Like, you're just gonna put the baby in it, like, put baby, like, haven't you learned your lesson yet? And there's some gas station droids. So he puts Oso, like, Oso is asleep, though. And he puts him in, like, one of those things, like, one of those things, I mean, Oso's a little kid, and there was plenty, I mean, it was a perfectly good environment for the time being, but not to get off the ship. But again, I mean, the Mandalorian is in a tough spot because he's got to keep it all secret. But he gets off, we see gas station droids, he says no droids, then we hear a hey, hey. And we said, I said, holy Sidaris, like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah. At first, I actually didn't say holy Sidaris. It took me a few minutes. I just said, like, whoever this is they casted is absolutely amazing. And then I realized who it was. It's Amy Sidaris. So she's delightful in this episode. I mean, I don't even know how what else to say other than... probably beyond delightful, maybe. So, hey, hey, holy Sidaris, strangers with candy, so good. He has 500 credits he could give her. She goes, oh, that's good for, like, the you know, landing pad. And she goes, what do you think? She asks the droids. She spent too much time with these droids. They think she'd be the first to admit it. And he says, I'll get your money. And she goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. No droids. Yeah. And then as he walks off, she goes, oh, you're a real womp rat. Then there's great continuity because Mando exits Hangar 3-5. He heads into town. There's ominous music. There's a pan up and we see some stuff from this teaser trailer. I don't know what the character's name is, but Amy Sedaris is playing poker with the droids. And then there's noises from the ship. She goes, stay in there or something. And we see baby Oso comes out of the ship. And she goes, now, now. And she tells the droid, how do I know what it is? She goes, are you hungry? And then she goes, here's the plan. I'll look after you, and then I'll charge, you know, that Mandalorian for babysitting a ton of dough and tip. She calls him Bright Eyes, which I liked a lot. So very, very nice scene. And also, I think, like, they couldn't have known what the audience reaction was going to be to this show or this season or Baby Oso. But she definitely represents the audience. I mean, I feel like the overall reaction to Baby Oso in some sense, in everybody's dream, to babysit Baby Oso. So yeah, she says, oh, Bright Eyes. Then we switch to Mando going through town. It's a mess. And yeah, there's a lot of, like, the one headline I said something, something fan service, and I said, I wish I didn't read that, but I don't even, like, there's a lot of familiar locations and stuff. So, I mean, you say, oh, cool, this guy kind of recognized this, or I kind of recognize that. Looks like they use propane at the cantina. So he goes into the cantina, I think the original one. He says, hey, droid. And the droid goes, hey is for horses. And he says, hey, droid. And he goes, hey is for horse. Like, he goes, I'm not a hey droid. You know, my father figure was a hey droid. I'm a barkeep droid. If you want a hey droid, go to the stables. And he says, what in the heck? And then he goes, I need work. And the dude goes, guild cannot operate on Tatooine. And he goes, I'm not in the guild. He goes, it does not improve your situation. And then we see a stranger holding a coin. And at first he's, you know, bathed in kind of shadow. He's kicking his feet up Han Solo-esque. And he says, think again, tin can. And he goes, you're looking for work? Have a seat, my friend. And this is at 8:43. And I honestly didn't know this, but I did. My first reaction when he was bathed in shadow was holy Cannavale. Probably not pronouncing that, but I thought it was Bobby Cannavale, who's done a little bit of everything in the past 15 to 20 years. And it's pretty much always a bright spot or an interesting spot, you know, an interesting character or just a bright spot. And, you know, most people, I mean, I think his brightest moment was in The Station Agent. But like bright human brightness. So then Mandalorian goes over and it's not Bobby Cannavale. It may be his son. I mean, no, I'm not positive it's son. I'm just playing, like, I looked it up, but his name's Toro Callahan. Toro Callahan. And he goes, I picked up a bounty puck mid-rim, man. Fennec Shand, gonna go get her out by beyond the Dune Sea. And the Mandalorian says, well, good luck with that. I'll see you later. Because Fennec Shand, because he thinks it's gonna be easy. And the Mandalorian says, it ain't gonna be easy. And he goes, well, I thought you needed work. He goes, well, how long you been with the guild? He goes, don't worry about it. He goes, well, you know, Fennec Shand's, you know, total, you know, she's tougher than tough and not possible. And then he goes to leave. And I don't know if he feels bad for the kid because the kid says, so listen, man, this is my first job. And you could keep all the money. Maybe it's just that he can keep all the money. He goes, but I need this job to get into the guild. He says, I can't do it alone. And the Mandalorian says, all right, meet me in hangar 3-5 in a half hour with 2 speeder bikes and give me a tracking fob. But obviously there's no trust there because, so this brings up 2 questions. I mean, one of which I think is like a little bit of fan fiction. One is like, one, how much they get paid that this kid could go get 2 speeder bikes and still get a return on, you know, that it makes sense. I mean, the other thing is that this kid is like a Bountafarian or whatever. Trustafarian was someone that toured with bands but had a trust fund. That was a term. And this kid does seem like a Trustabountafarian because everything he's got is new. And it just seemed like he had money to spend. So it'd be interesting. I mean, his backstory would be mildly interesting. But the Mandalorian goes back to a ship, no baby Oso, so he kind of flips. There was also a walking, one of those two-legged droids that always looks lost. He goes, oh no, I left my Oso alone again. Hey. And then Amy Sedaris says, you woke it up, dude. And he goes, oh, she goes, not so fast. You got an awful lot to learn about raising a young one. And then there's a couple looks exchanged. Then she goes, anyway, almost got your ship, you know, working on the ship without droids. You got any money? Mandalorian grabs a backpack of all things, like kind of an old school one. What do you call that? What's that material called? Canvas, a tan canvas one. And he goes, then of course he says, thank you. Then he goes out to the speeder bikes, and the dude goes, not too shabby, huh, Mando? Mando, like, tests out Mando was getting a chopper speeder bike, so chopper bike, a chopper speeder. So Mando tests out the bike. He goes, what'd you expect? This isn't Corellia. And he goes, ma'am, the kid. I got to pause it to tell you that 1238 is like a place to pause. There's just this beautiful 1234. This music starts and then there's these great desert shots. There's an overhead shot now and later that are just simple shots, but I really thought they were just breathtaking in their simpleness. I don't know, and just the lines and stuff. Then they stop and the Mandalorian says, heads up. He goes, what is it? He goes, Tusken Raiders. And he goes, then they go back and forth. The Mandalorian goes, these are the locals. And he goes, well, I'm not worried about it. And he goes, well, why don't you tell them yourself? So then the Tusken Raiders are there. Mando says, relax. He kind of talks to them. They communicate by like a sign language. So they go back and forth. He goes, yeah, I'm working on getting us a passage across their land. And he exchanges the kids' binoculars. He goes, they were brand new yesterday. And Mandalorian goes, they were. And then we have another nice shot of this, like I said, an overhead shot of them on bikes in the sand and the dunes going downhill. Then they stop again. The Mandalorian says, just get down, man. He goes, what? He goes, tell me what you see. He goes, do back. And he goes, yeah, let's go down there and check it out. Not sure if it's Fennec Shand or somebody else. It's another bounty hunter and ends up, and they talk about kind of scavenging that. And then realize that Fennec Shand's a distance off and she's got like this spitball thing with lasers. So she starts hitting them with spitballs, you know, with the Mandalorian's armor. He says, that's not cool. Like, cause she has like them don't do this. Anybody that's listening, but they're spitballs that dipped in food dye. Or some kind of dye. He says, this is messing my look up. So he goes, good thing you hit my Beskar. Because, you know, he goes, it could look. And the kid goes, I don't even wear any Beskar. And Mandalorian goes, nope. He goes, we'll have to wait till dark. I'm going to rest. You take first watch. Then we see Fennec Shand watching. The kid, he goes, it's time to ride, Mando. And Mandalorian is faking being asleep. He goes, sleep on the job, old man. And he kind of tries to be like Han Solo smooth. And Mandalorian goes, are you done? And then they learn that, we learn that Fennec Shand has like a thermal scope. So they use these flares to try to get it. We got a chance, during that, Mandalorian's bike gets hit by a, well, you wouldn't think this, but a chopper is very vulnerable to spitballs. So Mandalorian loses his bike. They make a bunch of quick moves. And then there's a dance off between the kid and Fennec Shand, or however you spell it. He's not very good. He says, ow. And then the Mandalorian shows up. So he goes, great distraction with your dancing. And he goes, we're taking you in, Fennec. Find your blaster, kid. And she goes, oh, a Mandalorian. It's been a long time since I've ever seen one of you. Anybody you hear about what's going down on Navarro? Sounds like that Mandalorian got off easy. And then the kid says, you're my ticket into the guild, so quit talking. Then they go back down and they realize they can't get across the desert. They only have one bike. So Mandalorian has to go get the dew back because there's a little bit of lack of trust still. So the kid says, oh, I'll watch her. And he sits on his bike and he kind of watches Fennec Shand. The dawn comes and she wakes up and kind of groans. She goes, it's been a while. Suns are coming up. And she goes, if you could just give me a ride to Mos Espa. So remember, there's Mos Eisley. I kind of remember Mos Espa, too. I don't, you know. And she goes, it could pay you double. He goes, I don't care. She goes, well, it seems like you're not the boss. He goes, oh, I'm only because I let him be the boss. I just want to get into the guild. I don't care about the money. And she goes, you already have something they care about more than money. This is when I put the whole Tristafarian thing in, because he is very well-dressed and new clothes and everything. I mean, it might not be a trust. He might have got, like, whatever, 30,000 credits. They say, well, you're going to go to school? Like, this is how much money we have set aside for you. Like, kind of like a prodigal child. I mean, maybe in this world, his dad is, like, a Bobby Cannavale of, I don't know, Corellia or something. This is a beloved, multi-talented performer, and he says, Pop, I want to be a man, I got to go out on my own. And the father says, well, you're a bit of a adult, no offense, kid, but I can't stop you. So let's see, Mandalorian, She goes, geez, you could get that armor, they, you know, and the Mandalorian. They'd welcome you with open arms. It's legendary. And he says, I don't know. And she goes, well, they said that the Mandalorian had a child with him. And the kid goes, huh? And she goes, fear not, I can help you. You know, make a deal for yourself. And then they go kind of face to face. And the kid goes, that was some good advice. Who wouldn't want to be a legend? Thanks for the tip. And then he spitballs Fennec Shand. Then the next thing we see is Mando on a dewback. He gets out there, some Western music. He finds Shan, spitballed. She's, you know, she's been spitballed, totally spitballed. So he goes back to town. You know, it takes a while. They skip that part, obviously. It's nighttime. Mando returns. There's good music. Doors open to 3-5. And the speeder bike's parked there. Everything's empty. The droids are hiding. And Toro says, it took you long enough. I'm calling the shots now, huh, Mando? And he goes, raise him. And then he has Amy Sedaris, she goes, cuff him. You're a guild traitor. But the Mandalorian has another flare up his sleeve. Literally, he's got, I got a flare up my sleeve. He goes, this is going to make me legendary. But it doesn't make him legendary. It ends up that he is adult because Mando outmaneuvers him, spitballs him. Right on his, he goes, these are my fancy clothes, my fancy bounty hunter clothes. But Amy Sedaris is more concerned with where Baby Oso is. She goes, got to get it. Where is it? And Baby Oso's hiding behind some baskets. She goes, there you are. Are you hiding from us? And then she goes, look at you. Oh, it's so loud for your big, big little ears. And then the Mandalorian must have grabbed, like, I think he grabs, like, I guess I'll watch it here, but he grabs something out of the kid's pockets, which I couldn't tell if they were shells or funds. And he uses that to pay off Amy Sedaris because she goes, take it, you didn't get paid. And then he goes, well, will this cover me? And she goes, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I couldn't tell if it was like, a, oh, yeah. Because just sometimes things are a little dark or I just don't know what I'm looking at. I'm going to try to watch it again, but it's pretty light in where I'm watching this too, you know, so I can attempt to read my handwriting. Yeah, but then she goes, then there's like the outro music. She tells the droids to bring the kid, spitball kid, to Beggar's Canyon. Then there's the out music as the Mandalorian ship takes off. But then we start to hear that famous space static sound and spurs. And then we hear, like, who? But I'm going to wait for the episode to catch up. She's picking up Yoda now, or Baby Oso, who is reaching out to her. It says child coos in the, what is the subtitles? That was really loud for your big ears. Okay, so he opens his pocket. I think it's his wallet he pulls out. Now he walks over. And takes the baby, and he's going to go pay her here. So I just want to see if it was money or shells. So I take it he didn't get paid. He goes, yeah, this kid had trust, and he took all the money out in his ATM. Oh, yeah, it looks like it's various kinds of money. So then, yeah, Mandalorian and Oso take off. And after they take off, we hear the space sound effects in the spurs. And then we just see a figure checking out Fennec Shand in the desert at night. We hear spurs, but I don't see the person had that. I don't see that they necessarily have spurs. I wonder if this is Greef Karga's, because the person has boots and a cape on. We never see anything more than that. And the episode ends with 10... ends up with 10 paintings at the end, just like the other episodes, except for the one where I was like, does it 9 or 10? So it must always end with 10. So that was the episode. Then let's see. Some of this, there's a lot that came up here. So let's start with Blackbird, the Beatles song. Because it looked like the spaceship was a Blackbird SR or whatever. written by Paul McCartney, credited to Lennon and McCartney, although McCartney's the only Beatle who appears on the track. He says the lyrics were inspired by him hearing the call of a blackbird in India, and also the 60s culturally in the United States. Let's see. It was inspired by Bach's Bori in E minor, a well-known lute piece, often played on the classical guitar. Let's see what else here. He played it at home for his future wife, Linda. Finger-pricking technique was taught to him by the folk singer Donovan. It kind of it seems like it has different meanings and contradictory statements about its inspiration and meaning, which I can understand. Legacy, let's see, it was a number five of the White, like some people say it's the fifth best song on the White Album's 30 tracks. Very popular, remade probably a lot of different times. Yeah, there's a whole Wikipedia article about it. And it's, you know, it's a song a lot of people know. What about an actual blackbird? Or the ship? Let's see. The Wikipedia says there's a lot of groups that could be considered blackbirds. There's Old World, Chinese, Common, Gray-Winged, Indian, Somali Thrush, Tibetan, and White-Collared. Oh, there's two groups. It says Old World Blackbirds and New World Blackbirds. So, and then there's a lot of stuff, film, theater, TV. What about the places consuming? Oh, air, the SR-71 was a long-range, high-altitude Mach 3 aircraft made by Lockheed and Skunk Works. Clarence Kelly Johnson was responsible for many of the innovative concepts. Introduced in 1966, retired in 1999. So it had a 33-year run. Took over for the U2. Let's see. Yeah, so a little bit, you know, it was one of those things that butterfly in the sky, that could fly twice as high. But it did look a lot like the ship the person was flying, at least to me. And it was kind of supposed to be stealthy. So, that, I don't know, that's a little bit about the black. Speaking of flying, oh, we'll do that next. Oh, well, this is flying in space. This is from Khan Academy. You know, I Googled, is there momentum in space? And this came up. You know, momentum is a word we hear colloquially and in, colloquially and in everyday life. Momentum is a measurement of mass in motion and how much mass is in how much motion, usually given the symbol P. And, you know, link to this because I don't have the exact... So there's impulse. This talks about a lot about calculating it. Momentum in space, so many people are familiar with astronauts in orbit. They appear to effortlessly push around objects. Because astronauts and objects are both in free fall, they don't have to contend with gravity. However, they still possess the same momentum they do on Earth. It can just be difficult to change the momentum. So I don't know. Then there's a math problem that I'm not going to be able to. So I guess there is momentum in space. It's just harder to change the momentum. So I don't know what that means for keeping Baby Oso in Baby Oso's seat. That was my main thing. Movie Top Gun, I talked about in an episode not that long ago. It came out in 1986. I think there's a new one coming out at some point. June 26, 2020. It has Tom Cruise, Kelly McGillis, Val Kilmer, Anthony Edwards, Tom Skerritt, and many more. It is a popular movie. I mean, I talked about it in an episode, but it just had a little, there was a little nod to it in this one. Now, I know a lot of listeners are big Stephen King fans, and a lot of them have read this the Dark Tower series. And I think the first book is called The Gunslinger. So I looked that up on Wikipedia, and it says it's a fantasy novella by Stephen King, originally published in 1982 in the Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction. Oh, no, in 78. Then it was collected with four other stories as The Dark Tower, The Gunslinger. Then it became the first chapter of the book and was revised for the inclusion. And it also takes place in the desert and has a raven. So I don't know. It's been a while since I read it, and a lot of listeners say you read the whole series. I know there was a movie that wasn't super successful, but that really doesn't mean anything about the book. So I don't know. Maybe at some point I will commit myself to reading the whole Dark Tower series. But yeah, so that's just a little bit about that. I'll link to that. How about the show Strangers with Candy? That's like an Amy Sedaris property. It was produced by Comedy Central 1999 to 2000, three seasons. Considered a cult, one of the top cult shows or prequels. It released in 2005. It tells the story of Amy Sedaris' character, Jerry, returning to high school as a freshman at age 46. At the Flat Point High School, and Amy had lived a very full life. It was first envisioned Stephen Colbert, Paul Dinello, Mitch Rouse, and Amy Sedaris, kind of based on some other stuff they saw and after school specials and teen series, and eventually worked it into this material. So maybe something you've seen before. Let's see. It looks like maybe, I don't know if there's another movie in development right now, but definitely something worth checking out. I mean, if you're unfamiliar with the real brilliant work of Amy Sedaris, I mean, kind of pretty much everywhere, TV, stage, voiceover, film, Alpha in the holiday season. She's written a lot of stuff, playwright. So, Amy even had according to Wikipedia, a cupcake and cheese ball business, Dusty Food Cupcakes. So I don't know, just again, someone that I've always admired and looked up to and say, man, like, I don't know. That's just someone that's, really impresses me. You know, someone I haven't heard of in a while, but that's probably my fault. It's Bright Eyes, Connor, or I can't say it, Connor, I can't ever say it's the last name, but Bright Eyes was a band with Connor, who I think played everything. Maybe on tour they had other ones, from Omaha, Nebraska. This was like kind of like 90s indie rock. I guess I can't believe it's 90s indie rock. I'm wide awake. It's morning. No, okay. So I guess that was in 2004. So I'm trying to just think of like what is like or what's going on now. People's Key. So still recording 2008, 2011. Usually it's Mike Mugas, Connor, and then Nate Walcott. You know, kind of like a indie singer songwriter vibe, I guess is my memory. And let's see what Connor's doing. What else? Like a quick over there. Singer songwriter. Yeah, a bunch of other bands. Currently, Better Oblivion Community Center. And playing solo. So Connor Orbs, I think it's O-B-E-R-S-T, but I always think it's like, it's not Oberst, I don't think. But yeah, that's what Bright Eyes made me think of. Then speaking of music, I think actually Amy Sedaris told Baby Yoda Now. So I said, well, let me look that up. That's a song by Radiohead, right? No, it's They're There. And it's actually one of the songs I really like. It was on 2003's Hail to the Thief. It was also, they performed an early version during a webcast in 2000, before the album. It's a rock song with layered percussion building to a loud climax. Influenced by Sushi and the Banshees and Pixies. York said the song was supposed to be comforting. It's all right. You're just imagining it. So yeah, They're There. The whole idea is saying, hey, I'm here to put you to sleep. They're There. So, and actually on the single, it looks like there was a song There Where Bluebirds Fly or something. Okay. Another thing was Bobby Cannavale, but what really made me think of, like, it made me think of the movie The Station Agent, which is, if it's a movie, if you haven't seen this movie, you do yourself a favor and track it down. I got to see it in a theater. It's a 2003 comedy drama. Tom McCarthy wrote and directed it. Peter Dinklage is the star of the film. I mean, without a doubt. It takes place when Peter Dinklage's character, who kind of like is a bit like Scoots in real life, says, geez, I'd like to be alone and, you know, just mind my own business. So he moves into an abandoned train station. He purchases it. And there's also like this niche thing. I mean, this was before the internet was super huge, but because he's like a train chaser, I think, like, or somebody who likes to take videos of trains and share them on the internet. I mean, I guess the internet was a thing, but Patricia Clarkson, Michelle Williams, and Bobby Cannavale and John Slattery are also all in the movie. It only cost, independent film, $500,000 to make. Finbar McBride is a character that Peter Dinklage plays. Then he meets, like, it's just great. You just got to see the movie. I guess I don't want to describe it anymore, but Bobby Cannavale. There's a little bit of surrealism, too, at least with Bobby Cannavale's character, Joe. And, I mean, it is like one of those movies that will make you, take you on multiple emotional journeys, really make you feel, really make you feel a lot. So, yeah, do yourself a favor. Let's see what Robert Ebert always said. Oh, and Elvis Mitchell. Wow, two of my favorites. Elvis Mitchell said, Tom McCarthy has such an appreciation for quiet that it occupies the same space as a character in this film. A delicate, thoughtful, and awful, and often hilarious take on loneliness. It's the kind of appetizing movie you want to share with others. This is all from the Wikipedia page, by the way. And then Roger Ebert said, this is a comedy, but it's also sad. And it's simply a story about trying to figure out what you love to do and then trying to figure out how to do it. It's a great relief. The Station Agent is not one of those movies in which the problem is that the characters have not slept with each other and the solution is that they do. It's more about the enormous unrealized fears and angers that throb beneath the surfaces of their lives. So definitely a movie worth checking out. You say, Scoots, I don't know who Bobby Cannavale is. I said, whoa, really? And I will say that sometimes he is like too handsome and charming, and I do get jealous of him in certain roles. And I say, I've had enough of you, Cannavale, with your jawline and your smile and your kind eyes. But he really is a delight. I mean, without a doubt, especially if you're the Station Agent, I think was a big breakthrough, in my opinion. But he's been on movies, TV. He's even in Marvel movies, so he's kind of everywhere. Mr. Robot, you know, I know, I mean, I'm a fan of that show, but not, I mean, probably a lot of listeners are. There's even some shows I haven't seen him in, which were famous. Will and Grace, Nurse Jackie, Modern Family. He does voiceover work. And a lot of other stuff. I mean, just seems like an absolute wonder. And then it turns out his son was in this episode. Okay, next up is Chopper. This we'll finish up with. A chopper is a style. Okay, so it's not, it is a motorcycle. I always am like, is it a motorcycle or not? It's a custom motorcycle that emerged in California in the 1950s. It's the most extreme of, or perhaps the most extreme, according to Wikipedia, of custom styles. Using radically modified steering angles and lengthened forks for a stretched out appearance. It can be built from an original motorcycle, which is then modified, chopped, or built up from scratch. They have long front ends with extended forks, coupled with an increased rate angle, hardtail frames, frames without rear suspension, or like different kinds of handlebars. And there was like in the movie Easy Rider, Peter Fonda rode one. So it's a little bit about choppers. And then I actually have somebody that wants to come on the show really fast. They haven't been on the podcast in like, I think like 5 or 6 years. It's been like 6 years. Hey, everybody. My name is Wendy Marstrap, and you may have never heard of me. I was on the podcast in its first year, and Scooter just never had me back. I think maybe he had me back one time for May the 4th be with you day. And then he kind of forgot about me, but that's fine because I have a best friend who's a Dewback, Dewey the Dewback, who's here with me, curled up at my feet. I'm patting Dewey's head right now. And the reason Scooter had me on was because I am from the world of Star Wars, and I am a big fan of, I have a dream of having a travel show for Star Wars and telling people about all the great places they could go. And Scooter's had even forgot about me. I mean, you know, he's busy with his show and everything. And then he said when he saw the Dewback, he thought of Dewey. And he forgot my name, he said, up until I said, he said, how are you going to open the show? How are you going to introduce yourself? And I said, Scooter, did you forget my name? It's Wendy Marstrap, and this is Dewey, my Dewback. And he said, well, I remember Dewey. And so I'm going to come on the program occasionally and tell you about places in Star Wars, because Scooter doesn't want to look anything up. And we'll probably be using, I'll be honest, I'll be in your world. You know, I travel by the fan fiction fantasy machine, so I could travel between worlds. Don't worry about that at all. So tonight I'm going to tell you about Corellia, and we'll be using the Star Wars Wikia probably for a lot of this and my own knowledge. Now, Corellia is one of the core worlds. It's a temperate climate, and that's what I wanted to tell you about first. Come here for a temperate climate, forests, jungles, and cities. You're really going to like it, but if you love industry, and you now they say there's a lot of these adventurers on like those at whatever that atlas, global atlas or whatever that site is that puts people's pictures up of them adventuring. I don't know what it's called, but it's something like that. Scooter said you could come to some of the abandoned shipyards on Corellia where TIE fighters were built, Star Destroyers, and all sorts of ships. Now, our planet is also very diverse. You know, we have our native residents and fauna and flora, and then we have, stuff that's been introduced to planets over the history of the world. It's actually not my planet. I'm from the planet in this episode. But anyway, not important at all. Now, the Corellian people were known for their wanderlust, but they were really a big part of the original Old Republic, and of course the Empire. And so some people might not remember us in the most remember them in the most positive of ways. And you might say, what's our most favorite, you know, what's the most famous resident of Corellia? And everyone might argue, but I would say it's probably Han Solo. Even though there's probably other, other famous people that have been there. And so if you have a chance, you know, don't go on Star Tours, you know, take a trip to Corellia. I mean, if it's possible, which it probably isn't for most of you, but you could picture, you could close your eyes now and picture Dewey, my Dewback, breathing calmly, just like any other dog would. breath rising and falling. And maybe we're all resting somewhere on Corellia. Maybe it's in a nice hotel overlooking the shipyards. Maybe we'll go on a tour there later. Maybe we'll go out to the forest and relax and enjoy our time. Then we'll go on a historical tour. You know, there's a talk of having an artist district where we could be repurposing imperial things. So it's exciting times here in Corellia. So come visit soon. I'm Wendy Marstrap. I'll talk to you soon. Good night.